Hey, wonderfuls! Welcome to episode 489 with comedian, performer, actor Blair Postman. I hope everyone is doing very well indeed as we shuffle into fall. I want to remind everybody that SF Sketchfest is back on for January into February. You can visit sfsketchfest.com for details, reminders. Almost all of the shows that we had programmed for last year are returning. So excited about that. So I would encourage you to check it out because tickets are on sale now. Hope to see some of you there. Oh boy. Well, thanks for bearing with me. And by the way, while I'm at it, thanks for bearing with us at Sketchfest for not getting to turn 20 like several years in a row, because I know you're going to be doing your one person show there.
That was just, it was, you know, kind of a bummer, but it was just like in a sea of bummer.
Yeah, well
so
said.
So it wasn't even, I mean, not that it wasn't important, it's very important, but it's also like we sadly became resigned, you know, that we were going to have another winter of not that much fun.
Yeah. And now it's an interesting blip. Well, it's more than a blip. It's a big blip, but it is interesting that when I think about, like, when I review the last 365 days, I'm like, oh, you know what? Like, there's a lot that felt kind of normal. Yeah. And then I realized there's this giant blank spot where a bunch of stuff, including my festival, should be. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
What's going on
hold
there?
Hold on. That was not a normal year at all.
But it was like normaler.
Yeah, it was normaler.
And so for more of it.
It was normaler.
And so it felt, I'm here for all the great new vocabulary words.
Me too.
But yeah, it was more normal. And I think we kind of knew we were going to come out of that. Yeah. Like, we knew we weren't in it. I can never decide with my computer if I see better with my glasses on or off.
We're taking them off. Okay. Great.
Taking them off. I think we kind of like knew like this really sucks, but we're pretty sure by mid to late February, early March, we get to do things again. We think.
No, it's true. You're absolutely right. It felt like it had an end date to it, which was ironic and sad when it came to the festival, because it was like, oh, this is like this.
You're
sliver.
Like, we're so close.
Yeah, just tempting so sliver.
I made my airplane reservations a few days ago.
Oh, for this the upcoming one. Nice. Excellent.
I always fly Southwest for comedy.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Because they are very easy to deal with, changing things around. And we have some friends out there. So now we get to see them. And, you know.
Excellent. Yeah. Southwest is like, and we don't have to have this. We don't have to do a dual stand up show, especially since I don't do stand up, where we talk about Southwest. That being said, they're both the best and the most vulnerable to changes. Like, flying out of Oakland, it's like, oh my god, there's a flight every hour, which is great, and then you're like, oh my god, they cancel every other one, and it's not their fault. It's like air traffic control is like, I'm sorry, you can't take off, like, you're gonna have to wait.
You can't. Yeah, I now live in Baltimore, which is, it's a whole other thing, but BWI over here is like one of their big hubs too, so it's very convenient. But yes, if something goes wrong, I don't know where else I'm going to like get another flight like that day.
They've got you. Which even though like, you know, there's so many areas that are kind of close to each other. Like, if you're on the West Coast, you take for granted that the East Coast is like, oh, please, don't you have like four airports that are equidistant from you? Can't you just like go to, you know, Jersey, New York,
I could go. I mean, D.C. is just, I mean, I could go to, you know, National or whatever, but it's just,
It's a whole thing. Unfortunately, you did just say you're from Baltimore, and there's been a lot of news in the.
I'm not from Baltimore.
I'm so sorry. That you just,
I just moved to Baltimore, and I'm desperately trying to fit in. I moved to Louisville.
Okay.
And I have an 86-year-old neighbor who's like legit Italian, like, and there's the old ladies still live in this neighborhood, some of them. And I'm just trying for them to, like, I don't want to get on their bad side. That's, you know.
Right.
That's my Baltimore, like, our first year here. I'm just trying not to piss off these
I think
Italian
that's a
ladies.
Good rule of thumb. I think that's a good rule of thumb. It's something that someone else might overlook, not realizing that a lot of their life might be affected by the ladies
who
own the neighborhood.
I am half Italian from New Jersey. I'm New Jersey Italian. Or at least half. I get it immediately. Yeah. Like, they seem really sweet, but also I'm scared, scared at like an appropriate amount
right.
of fear.
That's exactly right.
I'm not terrified. No, we talk all the time, but I also know I am not in charge.
I think that's all.
Which is unusual for me.
Makes sense. Wait, so what took you guys to Baltimore?
COVID. So my day job is based in DC.
Got it.
And it went all remote for a long time. And even now we're only going to have to be unremote, let's say 20%, 30%. And I did a lot of things in my 20s, 30s, early 40s that were really interesting. I have some fun stories, but none of it involved saving any money. Uh-huh. And so I thought it would be nice to own a place like actually downtown somewhere before I died. And DC housing market, I don't know that it's San Francisco, but it's right
up there. I'm sure it's got to be right up there.
And
I'm
it
sure.
went even crazier. And it's like, I don't want to spend not that I could get it, but I don't want to take out $1 million mortgage for a fixer upper that's like 20 miles out of town where I have nothing to do.
100%.
So Baltimore, I'm right in the heart of all the stuff. And it's like, 20% of the price that comes with its own set of quirks, but we love it. It's a lot of fun. We used to come up here a lot. It's only about 40 minutes depending from the DC area, and we used to come up here a lot to eat and go out and do stuff. So it's a fun place, and it's closer to New York to go do comedy. So
for sure I brought that up because they're just that, like, if you are a person who follows, crime and wrongful convictions, Baltimore comes up a lot. And,
yes. Week,
I feel like I've been like floating on a cloud for the last week because,
I listened to as required by law, I listened to the podcast, when it first came out years ago. And then I think I watched the HBO.
The Amy Berg documentary.
But that's been a few years too.
Yep.
And I was just surprised because I feel like right around when that HBO miniseries or whatever you want to call it came out, they were at a dead end. I feel like they had lost their last appeal or something. You seem like you are more of an expert. I'm sure you could tell me.
First of all, we do not have to talk about this, but I am a little bit of a wonk on this.
I'm all about ADHD rabbit holes and whatever your rabbit hole is.
Podcast is only that. So that's how I knew immediately. I was like, oh, she's going to do just fine because we will probably have 18 open conversations that people are going to be like, that feels unresolved to me. There was 8 questions out there that were pretty important.
We'll be fine, but nobody else will enjoy it.
That's right.
Sorry, I apologize.
That's right. We've earned this. We've earned this. His conviction was overturned, and then it was held back up again on appeal for like a technicality. And there was dissenting opinion that was very carefully written and was the only opinion that made sense, and the other opinions were garbage. It was definitely like, and they had petitioned to be heard by the Supreme Court of the United States, which is really hard, next to impossible to achieve. And so they really needed, they would have kept fighting with every tool they had, but the fact that Marilyn Mosby's office came in and really was paying strong attention to making sure that convictions were sound and that they're the wrongful convictions and prioritizing, as she put it, like justice over incarceration kind of thing.
Right.
And they started investigating the case, and then that office, was able to talk to the defense, and the defense was like, oh, and by the way, here's this and this. And they were like, oh shit. So he's home, and nobody thinks they're going to, we all think they're going to drop charges.
Re-prosecute?
I don't think they're going to. They have nothing.
No, that's what I'm saying. You don't think they're going to re-prosecute. No,
they got nothing.
Well, and I remember, and now you will tell me what I have wrong here. Because it's been a long time, but I remember there was a lot of weird cell phone tower, like pinging stuff with like, where is this call really coming from? And it was just also, I mean, I don't want to sound like the most naive person in the world, but when you would listen to him, and look, I know narcissists up close, but he just didn't strike me as that. Yeah. And that is not the reason. There was so much, there was all this evidence and weird stuff and stuff they didn't investigate it. And then also, in addition, cherry on top, this guy just doesn't seem like a narcissist, although the best probably don't.
Yeah.
So, well, congratulations.
I know. I have nothing. I mean, listen, I've been donating a fair bit of money. That's all I can claim, other than just like supporting Rabia Chowdhury and you know, like weaseling my way into her life, as many of us have, but because she's a hero of mine. So listen, if you have a podcast and you can get your hero to come on it, then that's a great way to get to know them, because now I know all about her teen years, and so does everyone.
Well, if you ever come to Baltimore, we got a nice you know, guest room.
I'm telling you, I want to meet these ladies. I want to meet these ladies you live next door to. I want to get the whole sense of it all.
Yeah.
I would love to go to Baltimore. I've never been there, and I almost was going to go there for a con, like a Comic-Con appearance, and then and then that conflicted with something else. And you know, I have, like, I feel like when you've talked to enough people who are both, like, that sort of have that David Simon-esque passion for the city. Like, I love Baltimore, but Baltimore is so fucked up, but I love it. Yeah. Like, we're showing up for it because we love it. We're not writing it off. That's very infectious. Like, you feel you know?
I don't want to act like the queen of Baltimore. I got here in mid-December. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's just, but we used to, there's just an energy about it. It's like very, it's, to me, it is friendlier than, say, sorry, Washington, D.C. or what have you. I grew up in very northeastern New Jersey, just over the George Washington, north of the George Washington Bridge, from like 10 miles, but 6.5 hours if you're in traffic from Manhattan. And the there's a little bit of more of the like kind of realness sort of to it, but also it's less pretentious. It's by a lot, but maybe, you know, whether or not it wants to be. But the, you know, when you drive around and you see, you know, a lot of people see all the abandoned, dilapidated houses, and there's a lot of safety issues around that. But also, you can also see how beautiful, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They can be and are in their way. And I don't know everything that's happened in this city versus others, but it has much more of a personality. I mean, DC by construct is sort of, you know, I lived in around DC for the better part of 20 years. I lived also like in New York and Chicago and stuff in between there, but mostly in DC for about 20 adult years. And it's just, you know, people come in and out a lot for government jobs or with administrations. There's a lot that's related to that. It's only in the last, I'd say, 10 years or so that, to me, it's become less of just a company town with, like, and I loved that company town. I loved the nerd, like, well, here's a guy at the bar and he's, you know, you might think he seems nerdy, but he's a head NASA scientist or whatever.
Sure.
Or something that somebody more knowledgeable would me would know. And as a former lawyer, I will just say, like, though, too many lawyers. But the
company town. I mean, I think you're right. It's like DC, friends of mine who are
like
politicos,
Hollywood,
100%. They're like, honestly, it might be worse than LA. And I'm like, that's saying a lot.
It is.
All due respect to my
power,
love the city, which I do love.
Yeah, power without, right. Power for a lot of people who spent, this actually ties into your podcast general theme. You know, a lot of people who maybe weren't very popular in high school or junior high, you know, and didn't get out a lot because they were studying or doing what, you know, something else like that, you know, suddenly have power. That's got to take a toll.
Were you, what was your high school like in northeastern New Jersey? Was it a big, small?
It was very, it was a public high school, but very small. So New Jersey, and I come from a family of teachers and professors. They, you had these really little towns all outside New York City. So you could see the bridge almost.
Yeah.
And see the Hudson almost, you know, it's probably 3 miles. I'm making gestures as if I'm there, 3 miles in from like the Hudson. So you're right outside the biggest metropolis of you know, in the world. And this is the 70s and 80s we're talking. Yeah. But you're in these little towns. And so it's a very, it's a weird dichotomy. And so I went to a regional high school, Northern Valley Regional High School at Demarest. There were two high schools in Northern Valley. The other was Northern Valley Regional High School, Old Japan, where a young man named Cory Booker went to high school and graduated a year older, a year ahead of me, though I didn't know him and I didn't go, you know, I didn't get out a lot. They were very, there's probably like 240 maybe kids in my class. Mm-hmm. So not the tiniest, like kind of farm town small, but pretty small.
Yeah.
And very, you know, was always written up in some magazine of being one of the best public schools.
Okay.
And this and that, nice. And whatever. And they paid, you know, well, when you pay your teachers well, you actually get people who can afford to be teachers who are talented.
Yeah.
You know.
So it's a school district that gets it, in other words. Like if there's
yeah, mostly
that
because
key.
Mostly because their parents, I mean, my family was fine, but we weren't like on the rich side of town. There were some very, especially the other two towns who went to my school, they were and it still is a very well-to-do place. It is very expensive to buy a house. It didn't used to be like this, but it is now astronomically expensive to buy a house there. New Jersey largely funds public schools from property taxes, therefore that, you know, the property taxes are more because the value is higher, et cetera, and so on. And so you have, and there's fewer people there because there's people living in big houses more than say big apartment buildings and yada, yada, yada. You got more money per kid. And, but, you know, I just really, I wasn't the most popular. I did a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a few couple friends who were very popular, but did not invite me, knew better than to invite me to certain events, shall we say.
So
I was more like their alibi while they were out
doing
things that made for good stories.
That's so specific and like heart tugging in such a great way. Like I immediately scanned through my mind and was like, was I that for anyone? Did I have anyone like that? Like sort of trying to think if I could, because it feels familiar, but I can't, you know, it's not like I was in a group of popular girls who would have an alibi friend at all.
Well, you've had like 7,000 guests. It's probably come up.
I've taken on other guest memories. So
right.
Now I'm like,
just,
well, I remember when
it.
I
you're
was
like
in
a
private Catholic school. Wait, hold on. That
you
wasn't
were
me.
A sponge.
Yeah.
And we had that. We had, you know, my high school senior boyfriend was going to the Catholic high school and, you know, I went into high school. I had worn a back brace for scoliosis, like from literally like the week before I started junior high to I was still wearing it in high school, but I got just enough hours out of it each day I could. I would take it off in the morning, go to high school so I could wear real jeans, not with elastic waistbands, real jeans with snaps and stuff. And and then immediately would have to put it back on when I get home. I would make a different choice now. Yeah. I would say, I don't care what you guys think, what you think of my appearance. I'm going to be relaxing and sleeping, not in the So I went in with a lot of, I was a very confident grammar schooler and went in and had all that kind of, all the basic kind of stuff that I wouldn't have called bullying, but in retrospect, I'm like, oh no, that's what that was. With my back brace and my palate widener, wearing all at once, you know, it's like a John Hughes movie kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And then when I got to high school, I just felt like, you know, I think it felt like I was still wearing that back brace a lot of the time.
Well,
so, you know, and so I feel like I was trying to kind of catch up to my friends who had been cute.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, but, I totally.
And I was also very afraid of getting into trouble.
Okay. All right. Did you have siblings who were like
two brothers,
were
older
they good
brother,
kids, or
younger
were they...
brother? They're public school teachers now. Let's see. What shall we say? what's a good kid?
Fair.
No, they got in
fair enough.
Fuck tons. They got in a fuck ton of trouble, okay. Both of them at either side of me. And so I saw, especially with my older brother, I'm like, oh, I don't want a piece of that.
Yep.
I'm going to just, all I have to do is be perfect. That's all.
God, yes.
It's no problem. All you got to do is follow every rule, including the ones that you don't know are rules, everything will be fine forever.
Blair, I hear you and I feel you. And so it sounds to me from what you're saying that it was more placed on yourself rather than your parents making you feel that way.
No. I'm sorry. Did I give you that impression?
Okay, because so they definitely were. You and your parents were both expecting perfection. Got it.
Oh, yeah. You know, I started to write this joke, which is that it was like, you know, my father always expected me to do everything perfectly. This is not a finished joke, America. This is fresh.
Yeah, America. Take it easy on her.
Jesus Christ.
Come on.
But, you know, expected me to do everything perfectly, you know, but was he overly demanding or did he just believe in me?
Yeah, and So in some
ways I seem much less responsible, you know, after age, say 40, you know, when I gave up trying to be perfect and became a lot less scared of making mistakes than I was back then.
Yet still,
but back then may have been very scared for right now me.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
And now, a live reading from Rachel's Poetry Corner.
Elephants Theremin's Clifton, Neopets Porstrips Jepson, Pine Smell Jellybeans Goligoles, Skittles Squirrels and the Mole, Celery Chopsticks Pumpernickel, A Case of You by Joni Mitchell, Lullabies Tie-Dye The More You Know, all of these things on our wonderful show.
All these things and more wait for you on Wonderful, every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Your one-person show, which is Lady ADHD, right? I'm saying it right.
Yes.
I was like, I know it, but all of a sudden, you know, when you don't have something in front of you because you're like, yeah. I'm a pro and I know this show because I've seen this show in our lineup.
Who needs and notes?
We're bringing the show. And then all of a sudden I freak out and worry that I'm wrong. So just tell folks how much that like sort of calls back to your youth.
An enormous amount. And so I came of age in the 70s and 80s. I graduated high school from 88 in 1988. Yes, I'm very Gen X. We didn't have ADHD. Like it wasn't, it wasn't something being kicked around.
Sure.
And I this isn't in the show, but something I've kind of distilled in my head in the writing and putting this show together is that, you know, when you were an ADHD kid, probably still now, but certainly back then, you had a few choices. You could be a total disruptive bad kid.
Yeah.
Right. That was choice number one.
Sure.
You could be the kind of ADHD where you're hyperactive in your head, but you're quiet. And that's, we could talk about all kinds of sociology about why this is true, but female identifying kids would get more likely to be that type. And so they were just considered like space cadets.
Yep. Yep.
Or like I started reading when I was like 2 years old. So I clearly wasn't just dumb, but when I didn't focus on certain, when I would get an A this semester and a C that semester, that just meant I was a lazy person. And when you're lazy, that means you're a bad person because you just don't, you refuse to care. It is a conscious choice. You
are disrespectful to others.
Disrespectful. Yeah. You refuse to care. And which is really difficult to swallow when you are trying very hard to be perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, I really was trying much too hard to be perfect. And so I really didn't put everything together until I didn't pay attention to my ADHD probably until my early 40s. For mostly because even when I got a diagnosis in my 30s, they didn't have all the good drugs that they have now that actually kind of work.
Right.
But they also, there was just, everyone told you that, you know, it was bullshit and that it wasn't a real thing.
Right.
And so I, because I guess internalized desperately needing everybody to think I was doing the right thing, I just didn't really pay attention to it, which was a mistake.
Mm.
And I think when I was, I look back now and I see a very, a smart, creative kid who also wanted to have fun and liked learning, but definitely liked the things that she liked, who kind of got broken, honestly, for a while by trying to fit into this mold of the, I was in all non-traditional open classrooms in through grammar schools through fifth grade. There's a lot of self-paced learning. Mm. There's a lot of sitting on the floor in big circles, sharing, you know, there's no nailed down desks. You got to move them around. And then when I got into the environment, junior high and the rest of life, where the desks were definitely nailed down. And, you know, my math teacher really cared how I, do you remember having to cover your books? Like with paper bags.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Super cared, would take time out of the class to go around and inspect the how well your book was covered, which was not my forte.
Yeah.
And I like, suddenly I'm in that world. I'm like, where, how did this happen? How did I become like irresponsible and like sloppy? And so I just very much tried to not be those things. But I wound up doing well in high school, but everyone always telling you how much better you should have done. And I did a lot of activity. You know, I was editor in chief of the newspaper.
Oh, and you were? Okay.
Captain of the cheerleader squad. And, but we weren't very good cheerleaders. That's why. with the second highest GPA of any varsity team, though. So that's the kind of school it was. And so we, you know, there was all, I did all this stuff and excelled, but it was always with this hue of like, wow, you got in these good schools and whatever, but imagine what you could have done. That kind of, it's tough. And and then at the same time, I had this great impulse to have fun.
Right, sure.
You know, fun.
Yeah.
And so I really, and when I was a little kid, I mean, it wasn't everybody's kind of fun, but I was fun. I would have, you know, like a lot of ADHD people, I would get excited and have a lot of energy. And I'm sure that sometimes annoyed adults, but I was having a good time. And for all these years, I realized in retrospect, I basically had repressed this entire fun, loving, creative part of myself so I could go be a lawyer.
Mm.
Which I only did very briefly.
Uh-huh. Just to get to the point where you even did it, period, and what you have to go through to get to the point where you can briefly be one is a huge deal.
Well, yeah. And when I have, you know, people, it's a common misconception that people with ADHD brains can't focus on anything, right? But that's not accurate.
Yeah.
We can't focus on things because of our brain chemistry just because we're supposed to.
Right.
Like to not like fail a class or do... keep from getting divorced because you're so annoying.
Uh-huh.
But when we find something either very interesting, whatever that happens to mean to us, or also if it's urgent or novel, or sometimes if it's competitive, that release the brain chemistry works to release the dopamine so that you can really hyper focus.
Yes.
So I did fucking awful. My first year of law school, I was like, I don't know, was I last in the class? Probably. And if there was someone below me, they left before graduating.
Yeah.
And then it was a very small law school. And I realized nobody thought I could do it. People seemed to think I was stupid, which, by the way, I did not like. And then just to like prove a point, I did very well and took and passed a couple bar exams. And then I'm like, okay, I proved I could do it. I don't want to do this.
Right.
But it was a very expensive experiment.
Oh, God. I mean, was that, what, was it as simple as this is a very respected vocation that everyone thinks of as being hard to do that drew you to being a lawyer? Or were there aspirations that were more on the side of like, I'd like to be a trial lawyer, you know, I'm a performer at heart? Or
I think if I could have been I probably would have liked being what the TV version of a trial war was. But there's actually like a lot of reading of very small print footnotes. Oh, God, it's not, you know, but the no, I was told that I was very talkative. Hello. And I have, you know, I now in retrospect see that I was outwardly hyperactive, whereas most ADHD females, girls were not. They, and I didn't like bounce off the walls or punch people or whatever, because I've been socialized as a girl, but I will talk in the middle of class and like, I have a thought about what you're saying, teacher. And it wasn't like I was telling them to go fuck themselves. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm like, sure. Well, yeah. Well, you know what? I think Henry VIII. I had clearly done the reading.
Yes.
You know, so teachers, you should be a lawyer. My father really wanted me to be a lawyer. Hmm. You know, all these, this is what you do. And I didn't know what I wanted to do, because actually I did know what I wanted to do since I was 6 or 7 years old. I wanted to be a performer or a singer or a something. I didn't know at six. Yeah. That's what I wanted to do. But I was told my entire life that that was a terrible idea, that would bring me nothing but misery, that it basically would mean that I was stupid if I did it, because smart people don't go into show business. You know that, right, Janet?
I do.
That smart people don't go into show business.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no smart people here. Uh-huh. And and it's also lazy, because nothing is easier than being in show business.
I know.
I mean, it's just such an easy, lazy man's way to go. And so I basically made myself go to law school. I'm like, well, I'm going to need one of these. I mean, I'm not saying I thought this all out explicitly, but I think it came down to basically learning, well, if I can't do this stuff that clearly I'm always drawn to, and even on my regular day jobs swirled closer and closer and closer to being a performer until I finally did it. Mm. Because I had no choice. But I'm like, okay, lawyer, I guess. All right.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Lawyer. We'll do lawyer. The best thing I ever did before I had my come to Jesus with myself, and maybe I've had several, but was when it was decided I was going to law school. When I was in college, I had been a poli sci major, and I had almost finished my coursework by middle sophomore year. And I took a philosophy of religion class. And then I'm like, guess what? I'm changing majors. But I didn't get a bunch of pushback, because everyone's like, it doesn't matter, because you're going to law school. You can do whatever you want. And it was fascinating, and I loved it. And that was, you know, if you had given me a magic wand back then, I might have gone to, I don't know, grad school in philosophy or something. Don't ask me any questions. I don't remember most of it now.
Fair.
Lots of things have erased. I'm 52. Like, you know, the law school like erased a lot of stuff. But that I spent so much time trying to be something, not even trying to be something I wasn't, as much as denying the something that I was supposed to be, or at least try.
Yeah.
At least try to be.
Yeah. So you're
I love how we didn't even start. You didn't even say, hey, Blair.
That's right.
We're going to record now.
We roll into it before you even know we've been talking.
Now we're in. What is it? What has it been?
It's been 30. You know. It's been like 30. I think it's been like 30.
OK,
that's how we roll. That's how we roll. So
you can interrupt me at any time, by the way, because I know who I am. So you can interrupt me. You won't offend me if you interrupt me.
Well, I'm just wondering how, like, because you said that you were drawn to performing and you were doing a lot of activities at school, you gave me cheerleading, which is very performative. I mean, I guess, I assume.
I mean, yeah, but it wasn't.
But
sure.
But it certainly was not like doing
theater.
Sure,
you're in front of people.
Doing,
right.
Mm-hmm. And then editor-in-chief of the paper, certainly like is a community, like the community of putting the paper together, and like you ended up as kind of the student boss of all that. Did you do plays? Did you get time to, so
and
that
I
was a thing that never made it on
them.
The list.
I know this is gonna sound unbelievable, because I have the speaking voice of a demon.
Uh-huh.
But I for a person who's gotten almost no training in singing, I can sing.
Yeah.
And but I am like an alto, and I would sing in junior high, and we would have these reviews. but I was wearing that back brace, and so I couldn't dance, so I wouldn't get like the big, I mean, I could dance, but no one, it was, you know, it wasn't great. And it was hard to move in certain ways.
Sure.
And I loved to sing, and I was in freshman chorus, and then that was boring and I quit, and I wanted to And then I loved seeing the musicals. I loved our school musicals, but I was like, well, but I'm not, I was told that if I wanted to be an actress, that that was a terrible thing to want to be, and a real waste of everything I had been given. And so I was absolutely not encouraged, less discouraged from even beginning to have the thought or the idea of pursuing something like that.
And so did your parents have that, like, did they like watching TV? Did they, were they, or did that kind of disdain sort of begin and end with like, my daughter's not going to do that, but quick, such and such is on, let's all watch it. And like, this is entertainment and we appreciate it. You know what I mean? Cause I feel like we that dichotomy can exist.
We were kind of free range when it came to like TV and stuff. We didn't like all sit down and watch TV. Like my brothers and I would, but you know, my mom was a teacher. My dad was a professor, and he would, you know, had night classes and stuff. And he would. It wasn't a disdain. It's just that I think they thought I could really do it, and they found it scary, and also that it wouldn't reflect. They just had their idea. My father, in particular, had an idea of what they thought I should be, and then what would be the reflective glory of that. And this was not it. And you know, there might be a lot of other reasons for that too. Beyond, it was, I don't think it was all just out of pure, you know,
like acting, schmacting.
This isn't dignified,
right? What is your, what did your dad teach?
Mathematics and education.
Okay.
But he's a very gregarious person. He's much older now, he's someone who could speak to a group of people extemporaneously and be relatively charismatic and such, but no, this was a big no. No one's gonna be a performer. And I don't know, it was a really, you know, definitely not sharing this, you know, in public, you know, on Facebook. It has to only go on Instagram where they don't go when, when this comes out. But no, but the, it was just, I can't even tell you, I am clearly, because I'm being completely inarticulate, the amount of no fucking way that this was. And it wasn't because they were particularly prudish. You know what I mean? It wasn't like we were in a, you know, some sort of, you know, old school Baptist family where dancing is a sin. It wasn't like that. It was just like, no, you won't be smart. And you need to do something that shows that you're smart. Probably because that's what they wanted reflected. I don't know. Or just fear. Plain old fear. Maybe.
Which, you know, understood.
And they didn't come from a world in which anybody did that kind of thing.
What were your kind of escapes? You know, you had a boyfriend at least senior year. So you had some, little action going on just senior year. You were not necessarily going out with everybody. Maybe you would be the alibi. You were watching some TV with your brothers. Like what were your thing? Like,
I love comedy.
You loved watching comedy.
I mean, so you went to Catholic school, right?
I was joking when I said that. I was saying I had taken on the memory of someone who had done the podcast.
Everything you say to me exactly the truth.
I made it really confusing. So
You were very convincing. That's why you're a great actress. But my older brother's maybe 3 years older than me, just older enough that, you know, I could get some trickle down material. So like I would listen to. I had memorized George Carlin's Class Clown when I was in, third grade. Yeah. It was lax enough that I was like freely listening to that record over and over. And it's actually not that bad. And I had to go to CCD, which is like Sunday school for Catholics, but you go on like Wednesday night. I don't know. That's just how they do it. And my mother, very Italian, very Catholic, like we did all that. And maybe it was sixth grade we were doing something, learning about heaven, hell, purgatory, and limbo. And I'm the only one doing the CCD homework, you know, right? Because I want to be perfect. I don't want to get in trouble. Right. So, so the that teacher, it was just someone's mom, you know, it says, you know, we're going to learn about heaven, hell, purgatory, and limbo. And they have a misguided trust in me because I like do my homework or whatever. And I said, oh, I have something about heaven, hell, purgatory, and limbo. Can I bring it in next week? Sure. So I record, you know, like with the push down, I hold up the boombox to the record player.
Yes.
And I record that bit. I didn't, you know, no copyright, I didn't distribute it, but record that bit. And there's no swearing in it. It's actually pretty sweet. And it's George Carlin talking about the difference, heaven, hell, purgatory, limbo. And Ms. Flannery was very angry. And she then told me, she went to grammar school with George Carlin, and he was a very naughty little boy.
Oh, my Lord. What an amazing coincidence.
And so because remember, like, I actually got baptized in the same church in the parish where he went to school.
Okay.
Because my parents were at Columbia University grad school. My father was in grad school there, and we lived up there. So, you know, we're not far from it. So it's not like that happened
crazy
in the middle of Oklahoma.
Gotcha.
But still, yeah, it was not.
He was quite something. Naughty little boy. I feel like we can agree George Carlin would have absolutely loved this story.
Oh, he would love this story. I mean, you know, I missed my opportunity to tell him.
Do you
know
Kelly? But have you met Kelly Carlin, his daughter?
No.
She's great. She's out and around.
I only know from, you know, the documentaries and stuff.
Yeah. If you're ever in the same place that I happen to be at the same time, I'd love to make that. She would
absolutely
love that story.
Happy to make that. And it's has the benefit of being true.
Yeah.
So I was listening to, and I also love to sing. I love musicals. I love whatever. I watch comedies. I love things like, this is a little older, but like WKRP in Cincinnati, or, you know, all the sitcoms. I love comedy. I would watch the Dick Van Dyke Show. I would watch in rerun. You know, I would watch all that stuff. I loved TV. Mm-hmm. I could have opinions about, in-depth opinions, you know, 70s and 80s, but not like, I didn't watch like soap operas.
Right.
You know, I didn't watch like Dynasty.
You're watching the fun stuff.
I mostly like the fun stuff. And sometimes some other stuff. And we would go into the city to see musicals as class, you know, trips like a lot.
Yeah.
So I got to see a lot of Broadway musicals. I loved musical theater. I didn't perform in it.
Right.
I love musical theater and I love comedy. And I would, we listened to the, in the 70s and or very early 80s, Steve Martin albums and Robin Williams and Richard Pryor. And then we were one of the first people I knew who had cable and HBO, et cetera. My father was a very early adopter with all kinds of techie things.
Yeah.
So HBO in the beginning, as much as it's into comedy now, it was so heavily comedy back then.
Yeah.
Because it was cheap to produce. The first, was it Robert Klein, I think, was the first specifically created for HBO special.
Yeah.
I still remember that. I can't stop my leg. My leg stopped. I don't really remember the entire bit, but we would watch all of the specials. They would do air to like wall to wall stand up specials and New Year's and just everything. Eddie Murphy. I used to sit there on the phone with my friend who then didn't want to later be friends with me. I can't imagine why. Reciting all of the first Eddie Murphy special where he does the ice cream man and everything. It's just every single word, the timing. I think there's, and this just occurs to me, I think there's something about timing and the pitch of voice and the other things that you use in comedy when people are doing it well, that has something to that says something musical about it.
100% could not agree more. For a person who loved music, that completely makes sense to me.
It could have gone either way. I'm glad you agree. I don't know if it's that. I always have said, people say they have photographic memories. I think I have an audiographic memory. Mm-hmm. I'm giving myself a little too much credit there. But, you know, can sing back things or say things back or remember somebody's tone when they said it. And I just loved it. And I loved the wordplay and I loved laughing. I loved for someone who didn't do.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Did your neighbor back into your car?
Bring that case to Judge Judy.
Think the mailman might be the real father?
Give that one to Judge Mathis.
But does your mom want you to flush her ashes down the toilet at Disney World when she passes away?
Now that's my jurisdiction. Welcome to the court of Judge John Hodgman, where the people are real, the disputes are real, and the stakes are often unusual.
If I got arrested for dumping your ashes in the Jungle Cruise, it would be an honor.
I don't want to be part of somebody getting a super yacht.
I don't know at what point you want to go into this, but we've had a worm bin before.
Available free right now at MaximumFun.org.
Judge John Hodgman, the court of last resort when your wife won't stop pretending to be a cat and knocking the clean laundry over.
And it actually segues perfectly to get us into this MASH game where we create this alternate universe you who has potential to have many experiences and opportunities that we're going to create for you that maybe heretofore have gone unrealized. Like, for example, let's go ahead and put you in a musical. Let's put you with you got all the gifts. You got all the talent, roles.
First of all, my only regret about this is that we're not using one of the little paper things.
I know.
That
you know, I used to do those, but back in the day, I used to actually hand hold my microphone, and it was too hard to do with two.
Yeah,
so I just have a little sheet that's a MASH.
Yeah,
sheet
no, I trust you,
but I do
also
love that.
Watched every MASH. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, so three musicals that you would love to be in, and you don't even have to, if you know you're like, I'd like to be someone in it, but you don't even have to, you don't even want to have to pick the specific role because there are so many great roles in it, you can just name the musicals, but if you know specifically, like, yes, I absolutely be in this musical as this character.
These are going to be kind of old school because I've seen some good musicals in the last couple of years, but yeah. I lived in Coastal North Carolina and stuff for a long time, and I missed some.
I feel like everything's being revived right now anyway, so
yeah.
I feel like you're golden.
Okay. A number one, since high school, since my high school produced it, and I was not in it, and not in it like I didn't make it, like didn't try out, yeah. Only went to see it.
Yeah.
I would say Guys and Dolls.
Great.
But, you know, oh God, what is her name? In other words, just by wondering whether the wedding is on or off. That what's that character?
No idea.
What's her name?
I don't know. I don't know if I've ever seen Guys and Dolls. I've done songs from them, like when I was
I don't
a
even
kid.
Care about the musical.
Yeah.
Her part in the musical.
That doll.
Somebody's
I'm gonna say
lament.
That doll.
That doll.
Great. Okay.
Somebody's lament. Okay. Two more musicals.
Yeah.
I do not want to be in Cats. We're going to narrow this down a little
bit. Respect
that. Gosh. Well, this is a departure for me, but I'm going to say Les Mis.
Great.
And of course, I think a lot of the main lead female characters didn't appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
But who's the one who does the song about dying? You know,
Cosette,
I'm gonna die. Is it what's Eponine?
Eponine. I should tell you that I am not a huge fan of music. Like, I'm
okay.
I enjoy musicals.
You're doing this
but
for
I'm
me.
Not,
you're trying to
I'm
be
doing
nice
this for you. So no, listen, this is your MASH game. But I will never know the answers unless it's like
okay.
The Music
the
Man
chick,
or
the
Pirates
one,
of Penzance.
I think it's Eponine.
Eponine.
On
okay.
My own pretending, she's got the good song, Eponine. And I think that's it. Somebody will
sorry,
text you
every,
and tell
I know,
me
sorry,
it.
Everyone's whose hearts were
I
crushing.
I know there's,
particularly me, who can come up with zero names.
And it's going to make you feel like I don't really love these things, but I do.
No, we all draw blanks.
I forget a lot of things, what a lot of people are called who
yeah.
I love. It's
yeah.
all right.
It's all right. It's all right.
And then the Jennifer Hudson, I know that's from the movie, but the Dreamgirls.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Great. Great, great, great.
I would also accept Rizzo, except yeah. The rest of the musical is terrible, but Rizzo is great.
It's a great role. It's a great role. Okay, next one is three television shows from any period in time that you would love to be a writer on.
Mary Tyler Moore.
Great.
Show.
Um,
You know, I think I would have liked Murphy Brown in the day.
Yeah, indeed.
I'm going back in the Wayback Machine.
I love it.
I seem to be having a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. It's a very on-the-spot game. It's a bit of a torture.
God, I'm taking this so seriously. It's
also
very
love that.
Stupid.
And you're not the only one.
There's so many. I'm trying to think. I'm like, MASH got so serious.
It did.
At the end, I'm trying to think really straight up sitcoms. Let's just say Cheers, because you can't go wrong.
Yes, indeed. Wonderful. Love it. Okay. Let's do three foods that in this reality, either you don't have access to because you had it one time really far away, or it's just something that you can't eat a ton of without some ramification. We're stripping all of that bare. We're removing
right.
all of that.
The answer to all three uh-huh. is ice cream. That's
right.
the real answer. But I will come up with two others for you.
Beautiful.
I will also have, these are very, you know, they're lowbrow. I would also have unlimited pizza.
Indeed.
And this is, you know, and, you know, like next day baked ziti, like, but
oh,
it's cold
hell
and
yeah.
you've heated it up.
Yes, indeed. I love it, love it, love it. Yeah. Beautiful list. Beautiful list. Okay. Next one. All due respect to your wonderful current partner. This is
sure.
MASH crushes three people from any era, any time, a book character, a cartoon character. It doesn't matter. You'd like to have some romantic or sexy times with three.
Okay. These are very specific. This is not like in general.
I
these are very specific to
these.
The era.
Great.
Okay. Bruce Willis in Moonlighting.
I couldn't
but
agree
only
more.
Bruce Willis
couldn't
in Moonlighting.
Couldn't agree more.
That was the so like now that you have like Ryan Gosling in the movie with Steve Carell and who's the redhead?
Crazy Stupid Love.
Yes, Crazy Stupid Love.
Great.
And especially when you watch all those sitcoms, there's not that many.
Yeah,
great.
That's not where they. Yeah, that's not where they live.
But I always thought I was gonna marry a funny Jewish guy, and now I'm trying to think, but not like Jerry. Like you know,
yeah,
the guy like a Morty kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to like have somebody represent that.
Right.
You know, we're going to go the other way. We're just going to go with Ryan Reynolds. How about that?
Great. Okay.
Because I think I did marry. He's adopted and he refuses to get a genetic test to amuse and appease me.
Uh-huh.
But I believe he is Jewish. He tells me all the reasons why it's very unlikely because of where and when he was born. And
yeah.
I'm like, you're Jewish.
I love it.
I'm like a not quite half Jewish. And so I feel like I know.
You feel it. You've got your. So. But he's the one who's refusing to take the test. Like, you're willing to find out that
he's
not Jewish
at
all. Yeah.
He doesn't have this burning need to know.
You're
going
to have to start collecting his, you're going to have to start wringing out his tongue in his sleep. Hopefully,
he
won't wake up.
Don't think that I haven't tried. He's very crafty.
Oh, man.
But yeah, he's like happy with who he is. And he's like, it doesn't change my life.
Yeah.
Oh, apparently. He's like, it doesn't change my life. And I'm like, well, but that's not the point.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's still a mystery. Okay. All right. Let's do three places in the world you'd love to have another home if we can just kind of teleport you there.
Hawaii.
Great.
The teleporting is important.
Yes.
Because,
indeed.
You know,
the
from
travel.
The East Coast, that's a trip.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Maui, but maybe Waikiki. Mm-hmm. I like being able to go to a lot of restaurants.
Yep.
And it's been many, 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 many years since I've been there, but I'm going to say somewhere around outside Sydney, Australia.
Great.
I've never been to this part, but I think I would like it Amalfi Coast, Italy.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I have been to Italy, but not there. But
yeah,
I'm sold.
Same and same.
And Stanley Tucci's new show,
I haven't
new-ish
watched
show.
It yet, but he's so wonderful.
It
I
just
mean,
doesn't. Stanley Tucci would have been a good one for that.
Oh, that is a good one. You can switch out if you
let's
want.
Let's take away Ryan Gosling
Great.
And put
the Tooch. And that's the thing. We all somehow collectively knew as a culture to call him the Tooch. No one, right. I feel like that didn't start with any one person. Like, we all just knew we had to call him the
Tooch. It's organic.
Oh, what a delight. Okay.
Groundswell.
Speaking of the Tooch, who has done many, many films, three movies that you can jump into. You're not reliving the plot. You're just in that world.
Era.
Yeah.
I already know the first.
Love it.
And we can pick, we can say it's Breakfast at Tiffany's. We could even say it's the old Dick Van Dyke Show. Mm-hmm. I want that. You could even sort of say early Mad Men, but before shit goes off the rails in the 70s. Like pre-Kennedy dead. Very specifically, probably mid-1961 to 1962.
Oh my God, amazing, amazing. 1961, it's very specific.
Love mid-century modern
NYC. Fiction. Could not love the specificity of that more. Love it. All right.
And then this is not going to, I just thought of another good, nice Jewish guy. But
now they're all coming out to play.
Broadcast News.
Yes.
Yes. It's not that it's like, it's that old DC with the nerds, but that Holly Hunter, there's a parallel universe where that kind of like crazy producer where you get to do all the things and there's so much adrenaline.
Yes.
Like I
that totally
I like
makes
that.
Sense. Yes.
It's that kind of milieu of an office. And then actually I've referenced this a few times, so I feel like I should use it. I'm going to say Dick Van Dyke Show. Again, it's in New York. You'd think I grew up around there. You'd think that I could find another place to live. But this is a different setting. This is I'm sitting around an office actually making, I'm being the woman in the Dick Van Dyke Show, who was the writer. And she only passed away in the last couple of years. Anyway, being funnier than all of those men. Yeah. Also, another version of that would be O'Toole and the Marklin Baker.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
my
yeah.
favorite year.
That's my favorite year. Oh, yeah. What a great movie. What
so
a great
I will
movie.
Say one of those. Yes. Dick Van Dyke, we'll call it my favorite year just because we worked so hard to think of the name.
No, that's great. You did that all the work on your own, but it's such a fantastic movie. Okay, great. Second to last category, let's do three alternate careers. Let's have you try on three alternate careers. And it's just the high points. You don't have to worry about the garbage that comes with every career.
Oh, no. We know that. I'm going to pretend that I'm making all of my money from comedy right now.
Great.
So we're going to put that over there. It
yes.
doesn't count because I'm already doing
doesn't
it.
Doesn't count.
I would love to be a Broadway singer.
Great.
I would be. Am I good enough? Probably not. Probably need to be a soprano. I don't care. I'm doing it.
In this reality, you got it, girl.
Other roles. I would love to be an author, but I realize that most of my, we'll just say incredibly successful nonfiction author.
Okay.
Successful. Like I've figured it all out, guys.
Great.
You're the answers to everything. And then you can, traveling around telling people.
Uh-huh.
And then
I think you just described Malcolm Gladwell in his own opinion of himself.
So, yes, whatever that is,
great.
Something like that.
Yep, got it.
And then I think I would have loved being, or at least parts of, whether it's actually on air or whether it's the producer, some kind of journalism, that same broadcast news fascination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Okay,
we'll call it journalism.
Perfect.
But broadcast journalism, who are we kidding? I'm not writing for the New York Times. That's not as exciting. I need the adrenaline.
Got to get that adrenaline. Okay, and then final segment, let's do three. I mean, I'm going to stick with comedy. We've been talking comedy. Let's stick with comedy.
Yep.
Three comedians you'd love to open for or feature for. Like Living or Dead from any era.
Living or Dead. Mm-hmm, he's making it harder, but Living or Dead. There's so much to think about with this because
Are you thinking about the crowd and what they expect?
I'm like, yes, I'm like, I am
that?
Absolutely thinking about it.
Yeah,
like,
that's
smart. What comedian I would like, I like so much that I wish they would ask me to open for them.
Right.
But okay, I would, this is all right. I would open for Lewis Black because honestly, I feel like we'd vibe.
Yes.
He's very busy, but modern, like Chris Rock I've seen him many times live before the career I have now, I did like booking agents. I started in the William Morris mailroom after that's how desperate I was to leave law. I went into the mailroom.
Yeah.
And did that whole thing.
I know you
thing.
Weren't
and,
the only one though, man. I mean, there yeah. are, yeah.
Oh
that,
yeah.
That story is.
It's almost a trope.
Yeah.
And he, I just saw him. I mean, he wasn't that he wasn't famous then, but it's just not like now.
Right.
And just amazing. And who would I, and third, and I'm leaving off so many people. Like I just, I feel like a responsibility.
I really appreciate that.
Like I feel like there's a lot of weight on this. I put a lot of pressure, and also stand up. You see, part of the problem is that, you know, I think women were largely drawn for a lot of really good reasons to improv and sketch for so long. They weren't the women on Saturday Night Live were not stand-ups. I'm going to pick someone dead just because I would have loved to open for George Carlin.
There you go. I was sort of hoping for that, right? That feels full circle. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Give me a number between 1 and 7.
6.
Great. All right. I'm going to do these very, very, very important, very scientific calculations.
Yes,
and I would love for you to do some vamping. Tell people where they can find you and
oh, my
stuff
God.
Like that.
Please find me. Please. I started comedy when I was 43 years old.
I love that.
Our stand-up comedy. And a lot of it, I used Zadie. I did all these flip charts. And let me tell you how popular it made me. To be a newbie middle-aged lady comic going into comedy shows with a flip chart.
Yeah.
You can find me at Lee. My Instagram is Postman Comedy. Lady ADHD tours, but is also monthly at Caveat in New York City. Our next show is actually tomorrow from when we're taping this. But it's if you go to my website, ADHDcomedy.com, you can find all of the Lady ADHD solo shows, which is kind of part TED Talk, part stand-up, and also all my regular old stand-up shows. So I'll be in Charleston, South Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina, Bristol, Tennessee, and maybe Wilmington, North Carolina in December, mid-December of 2022. But mostly, if you follow me on Instagram, you'll be sick of me. You will never miss anything I'm doing or any thought that I have. Or anything I felt like saying out loud. You will get all of it.
Gorgeous.
On Instagram.
Gorgeous. I have your results. I got to say, this is a pretty hot stuff.
I'm excited.
A lot of good stuff here. I am very pleased to tell you that, well, let me just start out with the fact that you have a mansion on the Amalfi Coast. If you
that
ever
is
run
amazing.
Out of money and you just need some, go ahead and sell that because you'll have millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Oh, that's nice.
And I
very
hate to go
nice.
Straight to you selling it, but I am just saying, I mean,
no,
a
let's be practical
on
with
the Amalfi
fantasy.
Coast. Let's just know right. that. Unlimited ice cream. Unlimited ice cream.
In fairness, I already sometimes live as though I do have unlimited ice cream. But yes, it's my favorite.
Never a second thought at any time. Unlimited ice
right.
cream.
Right. Beautiful.
Love also that you wrote for Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, congratulations to me. I probably won Emmys.
I'm sure I won Emmys. Also have the ability. Well, you know what? These sort of tie together in a sense. Because you have this ability to be in New York City in between 1961 and 1962. You know,
oh,
you're just
nice.
Getting
yes,
that
nice.
Era, you know, getting
right.
it all over you. It's going to be great.
Right. Beautiful.
Not totally inappropriate, but also you get to play that doll from Guys and Dolls. That
oh,
doll,
my God.
We can't remember.
It's not Clementine. It's not Gertrude, but it's somebody's
that
lament.
Doll. You also, and this is crazy because, you know, I don't know that Lewis Black necessarily imagines like his compatriot that he tours with also being in Guys and Dolls, but you are a diverse person
well,
in terms of your skills and talents.
He's,
so
I'm sure he would be open to it.
But I will say, while he would be wildly open to that, I think it would go fine. He would absolutely understand you being part of like broadcast journalism and having that like snappies. Like he would
in
be
fact,
like,
I think
oh,
he would
yes.
be in favor. Like it's that's
yes.
important right now.
Yes.
By the way, Adelaide's a lament.
Adelaide. Of course it's Adelaide.
Okay, sorry.
We figured it out, and by we, I mean you. So all of that
and
is
by
happening.
By me, you mean Google.
And by you, I mean Google.
That just leaves us with, and I did save this for last, because I am extremely excited and extremely envious based on my own crushes as a younger person. You know you got David Addison from Moonlighting, everybody! Bruce Willis!
Finally!
From the Moonlighting era, I salute
you, my friend.
Oh, when
they had that writer's strike, I was devastated. They had just gotten together.
I tip my hat to you. I am so in awe. Let me just come be
come
near
over to
both
our
of
house
you.
And
I just love it. I mean, that, I don't know. I can't tell you the last time I've been this excited about who someone ended up with in a romantic type way in MASH. I feel like I won.
I'm so glad.
I feel like I won. Blair, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And everybody, check out everything. Blair Postman and I have, this will come out like in just a little over a week. So the dates are fresh and they are meaningful because people will actually be able to take advantage of seeing you live in many of those cases, if not all.
I'm usually in New York if I'm not somewhere else touring for comedy, but you know where to find me.
Great. Great. And everybody else.
Thank you, Janet.
See you next week. Thank you.
Bye.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees? Lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.